welcome to Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense. And if you saw the screen on your computer when you logged in, it also is LannySense.com, because we're going to be changing the format of the show over the next month or so. But welcome to Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense, and welcome to LannySense.com. My name is Lanny Swardlow. I'm a registered nurse, political activist, and marijuana aficionado, and I want to welcome you to another of our wonderful, fabulous Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense shows, where we tell you the truth about marijuana, reveal the politics behind this prohibition, gives you the facts and information about its legendary medical and health benefits, and tries to clear up all that legal mumbo-jumbo that makes it so difficult, so dangerous, and nearly impossible for you to avail yourself of this ancient medicinal herb. That's right. Hey, you know, I said at the beginning of the show that you may be a little confused because it said LannySense.com. Hey, don't be confused. Just watch the site. The new show is going to be really fun when we get going with it. We're going to be covering more subjects, not just marijuana. Oh, we'll be continuing to cover marijuana, let me assure you. But there's a lot of other subjects out there that I really would like to be touching on, and you're going to be invited to call in and speak your mind on it. So watch my newsletter that I get sent out, and keep watching the show here, because we're going to be changing over the format. And by the way, if you don't get my newsletter, hey, I'm going to tell you later on in the show how you can get it, but I'll tell you again right now. Just go to marijuananews.org. At the top of the navigation bar, you'll see newsletter. Click on it, fill it out, and you'll get my newsletter. And I promise, as I said before, I don't send it out every day and about everything. It won't overflow your already, I'm sure, overflowing and too full email basket. Oh, wait. Well, listen, we have a wonderful, wonderful show for you tonight. It's Cannabis and Spiritual Practice, and it features the Reverend Terry Turner. The Reverend Turner is a minister of religious science and holds a master's degree in consciousness studies, and also a bachelor's degree in theology. He has been a sojourner of the spiritual path for almost 50 years, has been using cannabis for recreational, medicinal, and mostly spiritual purposes for about 50 years as well. He's also an informal student of such diverse disciplines as evangelical Christianity. Also, he's going to be, when he comes on, he can correct me because I'm sure I'm going to be mispronouncing all of these, Kundalini Yoga, I Ching, Holotropic Breathwork, Ethnobotany, and Shamanic Studies. He currently lives right here in the Coachella Valley in Desert Hot Springs. So we'll be having him on here in about 10 minutes talking about cannabis and spiritual practice. And you'll also learn about how you can come to a meeting where you can actually meet Reverend Turner and speak to him about the use of cannabis for spiritual practice. But before then, hey, I want to get to one of my usual little op-eds here. And, you know, 2019 was an exciting year, A lot of things happened. Now, it's not going to be as exciting as 2020. 2020 is going to be more exciting. Really, it's going to be. But 2019 was really something, too. And for the cannabis, we had a lot of wonderful things here. And I'm going to go over with you the top 10 plus one items that were sort of standouts of what happened relating to cannabis in 2019. Now, number 10 is California now allows home deliveries of cannabis, including in areas that have banned cannabis dispensaries. That's right. Even though Prop 64 permits cannabis businesses from seed to sale and provides opportunities for local governments to attain significant new tax revenues, over 75% of California cities and counties ban all cannabis businesses, including retail outlets. This results in forcing their residents to drive hundreds of miles to a locality that allows sales, or at most continue to do so, they obtain cannabis from criminals. Now, based on a section of Prop 64 that reads, a local jurisdiction shall not prevent transportation of marijuana or marijuana products on public roads by a licensee transporting marijuana or marijuana products in compliance with this division, that's what it says, the Bureau of Cannabis Control has determined that local jurisdictions cannot ban the delivery of cannabis to any home anywhere in California by any licensed cannabis retail business or no matter where it's located in California. So if your town, like, bans marijuana sales and distribution, there's a town 50 miles away that does have licenses, those places can deliver to you, even though your town has banned the sale. Needless to say, this is really has pissed off many local elected officials who, along with the League of California Cities, have mounted a legal challenge to the ruling. Now, this is going to take years to work its way through the courts and no doubt will wind up before California Supreme Court. In the meantime, residents can have cannabis delivered to their homes, and the local police and code enforcement officers cannot stop it. Rolling Stone had put a wonderful article on it, so if you ever get a chance to take a look at it, it's there. Number nine, the presence of THC in blood not associated with vehicle crash culpability. That's right. Conjuring up images of bloodbath on our highways and children run down by stone drivers leaving a fast food joint, government-funded drug warriors have been spreading misinformation and outright lies about the dangers of marijuana and driving, scrambling to find sky-is-falling scenarios to frighten the public. Driving under the influence of marijuana is one of their most successful gambits, but a new study is throwing cold water on their inflammatory rhetoric. In a study published in the July 2019 issue of Addiction, researchers wrote, quote, "We found no increase in crash risk after adjustment for age, sex, and use of other impairing substance in drivers with THC less than 5 nanograms per milliliter. For drivers with THC greater than 5 nanograms per milliliter, there may be an increased risk of crash responsibility, but this result was statistically non-significant, and further research is required." Now, number eight, cannabis essentially is associated with a drop in local crime. One of the most prevalent myths promulgated by those opposed to the legalization of marijuana is that crime will increase wherever it is sold, causing businesses to flee and neighborhoods to deteriorate. This myth is especially promulgated by police who have always opposed the legalization of cannabis, whether it is for medical or adult use. Local officials tend to listen to what their local police chief tells them, which motivates them to oppose allowing commercial cannabis businesses to operate in their areas as permitted by Prop 64. They do this even if their citizens voted in favor of Prop 64, and they may lose hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars in new tax revenues. Although multiple reports have shown that crime not only does not increase, but actually decreases in areas where commercial cannabis businesses operate, the myth continues to be propagated. A new report published in the September 2019 issue of Regional Science and Urban Economics found that the opening of a cannabis dispensary resulted in a 19% decrease in crime. It's interesting to note that a previous study published in the March 2018 issue of Preventive Medicine found that crime was more likely to occur in association with alcohol and tobacco stores than cannabis stores. Big surprise, huh? Number seven, adolescent cannabis use is not associated with structural brain differences in adulthood. Like ISIS marching children before they attack infidels, marijuana prohibition marched children before them as they attack the rising forces of marijuana law reform advocates. Ominously citing research papers, they warn that teens who smoke marijuana will have lower IQs and decreased cognitive abilities due to stunted brain development as a result of their use of cannabis. Trying to sound professional, learned, and more knowledgeable than you, they liberally toss out regions of the brains, orbital frontal regions, neocortex, hippocampus, amygdala, claiming with little or no evidence that teen brain Armageddon is just around the corner if they consume cannabis. Most of the studies alleging detrimental results from marijuana use by adolescents fail to account for the concomitant use of alcohol, which has been found in multiple studies to cause the problems in the adolescents that drug advocates ascribe to marijuana. Fortunately, there are researchers who are not undertaking the Office of National Drug Control Policy who have done the research to show that this is an all scaremongering reefer madness. In a truly exhausting and amazing study of 1,000 adolescent boys, the authors concluded, quote, "Adolescent cannabis use is not associated with structural differences in adulthood," end quote. There we go. Hey, number six, cannabis is effective in the treatment of chronic pain in adults. Hey, You know, we've had shows on that, so I'm not going to go into any details. But it boils down to, if you've got pain, use cannabis before you use any of the opioids. And most people are going to find that cannabis is all they need to treat their pain, and they don't have to turn to opioids. Then we have the number five, with the deaths from vaping-related illness, foment vaping crisis, and political hysteria. Although vaping has been practiced for thousands of years, dating back to ancient Egypt, the beginnings of its mainstream use goes back less than 50 years. The e-cigarette is even newer, being developed by the Chinese pharmacist Han Link's father had died from lung cancer due to smoking tobacco, and he wanted to develop a smokeless and hence safer way of ingesting tobacco's addictive ingredient, nicotine. He made the first e-cigarette, which he patented in 2003. Touted as a safer way to ingest tobacco and as a way to wean a person off tobacco, the e-cig was first introduced in Europe, but soon made its way to the U.S. in 2007. It wasn't long before cannabis consumers saw the benefits of using e-cig-type vapes for consuming cannabis. Since smoking cannabis, like smoking tobacco, introduces carcinogens, cancer-causing agents, into the lungs, it was believed that by using a smokeless, oil-based cartridge for inhaling cannabis, vape pens were inherently safer. Also, since cannabis was illegal, vape pens made it for an easy, discreet, and even stylish use, as no one would know if you were vaping cannabis or tobacco. In addition, the cannabis vapor creates a less potent and hence less noticeable aroma. For almost a decade, e-cigs and cannabis pens were used by millions with no problems. In 2019, an outbreak of severe vaping-associated lung illnesses manifesting symptoms such as coughing, chest pain, and shortness of breath, as well as nausea and vomiting, swept the nation. By September 2019, over 2,500 cases had been reported to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and two U.S. territories, with a total of 54 combined deaths. Although vitamin E acetate, which is used as a lutein thickener, has come under scrutiny, the exact cause of the vaping-associated lung illnesses is not known. It does occur more often in users of cannabis vape pens, especially illicit vape pens, than in tobacco e-cig users. Even though the number of deaths is relatively small compared to the 400,000 annual deaths in the U.S. from smoking tobacco, the media, with its mantra of, quote, if it bleeds, it leads, end quote, has hyped the problem to levels that are reminiscent of the worst of the reefer madness reporting of not too long ago. As a result, a frenzied panic has engulfed our elected officials, who are falling all over themselves, passing legislation restricting and banning e-cigs and cannabis vape pens. Okay. Hey, listen, you know what? I've gone through about five of the things, so you know what? We're going to wrap it up here. The next show, I'll go through the last five of the 2019 cannabis stories of notice. But right now, you know what? We want to get to the reason you really tuned in today, and that is to hear Terry Turner and cannabis as cannabis as spiritual practice. So without any further ado, I gave you an introduction to Terry at the beginning. He's a minister of religious science, got a bachelor's and holds a master's degree in consciousness studies, a bachelor's in theology, and I've known Terry for years. He is an absolutely amazing person. Terry Turner, welcome to Marijuana, Compassion, and Common Sense.
Well, thanks, Lanny. You had me in apparently a soundproof waiting room because I didn't hear a thing till just now.
Oh, you couldn't hear me either?
No.
You're supposed to be able to hear me. How bizarre. Mm. Well, thank you for sticking around. I think I would have left if I heard nothing there. Wow. I apologize that. Well, you're going to have to listen to the show to hear my little comments before I brought you in. Well, anyway, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on the show and talk about cannabis as spiritual practice. Before we get into cannabis as spiritual practice, I'd like to sort of clear something up beforehand. What is, at least as you see it, what is spiritual? What is spirituality?
Well, spirituality is an innate aspect of the human soul, just like playfulness is a unique quality of the human soul, and it's expressed, it's inborn in every single person. There are not some people who are spiritual and some people who are not spiritual, but it's expressed in different ways with different people. You know, just like playfulness, it can be expressed, you know, in a little game of hide and seek with kids, or it might be expressed in a more organized way, like, you know, a game of softball, or the ultimate organization where it's expressed with adults as, say, the World Series or something. So spirituality is expressed as just that yearning for that oneness with the invisible. And however that's expressed, maybe by lighting a candle or saying a prayer, or it could be organized into a religious service, or it could be something as elaborate and structured as a Roman Catholic high mass.
Well, it's interesting you said it's like playfulness, you know, and you said you describe it into a soul. Playfulness is genetic in a sense, because all mammals play. It's very important for survival, because young mammals play, and that's how they develop their facilities for, you know, catching prey or whatever it is later on in life. Is do you think maybe spirituality might be genetic? That we have a gene?
No, I don't think spirituality is genetic, because it's spirit is an immaterial aspect. It's just the it's just the soul's yearning for something more. It's a yearning for connection with something larger than ourselves.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about cannabis and spiritual practice. You've written a short treatise on it. Would you like to kind of explain a little bit what you mean when you say cannabis and spiritual practice?
Well, as I said in the treatise, and this goes back to the ancient Vedas. The Vedas are the oldest sacred texts that we have in our possession. Some people believe they were compiled as early as 2,000 years before the birth of Christianity. But in the Vedas, they talk about three uses of cannabis. They said it was useful to bring about joy, that it was also to be used to relieve anxiety, and it was used as an aid to meditation. So bringing joy, that would be a recreational use. You know, relieving anxiety is a medicinal use, but aiding in meditation is a spiritual use of cannabis. And it's the very state, you know, of cannabis. The visionary trance state is a meditative state, and some people have difficulty meditating on their own, but with cannabis, it's almost automatic, but if you use it with that particular intention to go into that state and you control your set and setting, then it'll take you into a very deep place of consciousness, in some cases even to the place known as Savikalpa Samadhi, which is the beginning of a unitive state of consciousness, which is very healing.
Okay, I want to get into that, but before we get into that, just, you know, this idea of using cannabis for spiritual enlightenment and so on, this is nothing new under the sun. It's one of the ancient uses of cannabis, isn't it?
Yes. In fact, the Vedic peoples did. There are many other peoples that did. And some people even believe that the ideas, the early precursors of religion, were actually facilitated these ideas by the use of visionary substances such as cannabis, because people couldn't have possibly dreamt up some of these things just in a normal state of consciousness.
Absolutely. So cannabis is just one of a number of plants, actually, though, that are used for spirituality.
Yes. Yes, there are, of course, stronger ones. The Vedas also talk about soma, which is, it was not a plant per se, but it was actually a mixture of drinks, much like ayahuasca would be, and that transported them to see visions of God and that sort of thing. And they ritually used it. And there were actually a collection of hymns to soma in the Rig Veda, which is one of the oldest of the Vedas.
So it dates back thousands of years, and in many cultures, but it was mainly Eastern and Middle Eastern cultures, I guess, that was used. It wasn't used very much in Western civilization for spiritual or any use until later on. So that's kind of interesting that it's kind of wrapped up in a lot of the spiritual ideas of the East, more so than the spiritual ideas of West.
Well, of course, my understanding is the cannabis plant actually originated in the steppes of Central Asia. That's its ancestral home, and these pre-Vedic peoples were using it then. There's evidence, archaeological evidence, that they were using it for ritual purposes, and they, over the centuries, they migrated south and east, south down to the area which is Mesopotamia, in the Fertile Crescent, and east over to the Indus Valley in what is now India. So those particular things. Now, there are other peoples, I think, in Africa that used it, and I'm not sure the history of that, but cannabis is not native to the Western Hemisphere. It was eventually brought there.
Right. Well, one of the things, it's been used for, thousands of years for spiritual use, but a lot of a lot of people would say that using cannabis to get high is immoral, that you shouldn't do that. There's a lot of people look down on it. What would you say to people that say the use of cannabis to get high, to have a religious or a spiritual experience, is immoral?
Well, that comes with the very... we pride ourselves in this culture of being technologically advanced, but we're spiritually very backward. And the idea that it's immoral is the idea that any state other than what we call consensual reality is not beneficial. It's harmful. It's pathological. It's a waste of time, and don't go there. But you see, the ancient peoples didn't have our technology, and they needed a way to heal diseases. They needed a way to get insights into the deeper mysteries of the universe, and they developed these technologies, thousands of years ago. And it's kind of like we look down on the Church of the Middle Ages because they believed that all of the planets revolved around the Earth. And then when Galileo came with his telescope and said, no, that's not true, they all revolve around the sun, and the people of the church refused to look into his telescope because they didn't want to know the truth. And so in our society, of course, we went on and mapped all of our solar system, but you see these Vedic peoples, they went into these other realms of consciousness and found them to be very beneficial. They mapped them out and named them and developed ways of getting there. But now you see in our smugness in our digital technology, we refuse to look through that telescope at a time when we need it the most, because we need to transcend this egoic me first idea that's destroying the planet.
Yeah, that's true. Very, very true. We needed to look at different things. Of course, the thing with cannabis, it was really mainly put down in the West, and it just kind of, through the United States, pushing its anti-cannabis fervor on countries throughout the world. These other countries that used to just accept it with no problem suddenly began to prevent it from being used. But that's an interesting point that you made there. When we talk about cannabis, and consciousness, how does cannabis work to expand consciousness?
Well, I don't know as scientists even know that? I mean, that's probably a scientific question. But from a spiritual perspective, I you know, my background is in consciousness studies and theology. What it potentiates the meditative experience, and the meditative experience is based on, we say stilling the thoughts, but what we really mean is that you're stepped back, you become still, you go into a state of beingness rather than doingness, and you become an observer of your thoughts. You're stepped back, you're not the thinker of your thoughts, you're the observer of your thoughts, and that detachment just opens you up to the innate. There's an innate tendency in our psyche, just like there's an innate tendency in our physical body, toward wholeness. And when the Bible says, be still and know that I am God. Or another place it says, surely in the midst of great waters they shall not draw nigh to God. The great waters being, you know, the activities and the events and the machinations of the human mind. So it's in the stillness that we allow our soul to realize its own wholeness.
Right. And it's I know it's kind of like, I'm not sure exactly how to put this, but the cannabis plant, by helping to expand our consciousness, then helps us to get in touch with spirituality. Is that the idea?
Well, it helps us to get in touch with the divine, with our divine nature, in the highest forms of consciousness. That's what samadhi actually is. It's when the ego dies for a time, and you realize that you are, in fact, that what you're seeking was really seeking you, that what you are seeking, you are already, you are that divine. The Bhagavad Gita, which is a later sacred writing, at the end of every chapter, they have a little saying. It says, tat tvam asi, which means thou art that being the divine. So what we're seeking, we really are already. And if we get still enough, we have a direct realization of that.
Well, you've written that the principal effect of cannabis is the induction of a visionary trance state. What is this visionary trance state that cannabis can help produce?
Well, just what I'm describing, you know, it's just a contemplative state. It's an opening of the soul. It's the slowing of the egoic aspect. Again, you're kind of more an observer, and you know, again, as you get to the upper reaches, the boundaries can dissolve. You know, I've been doing spiritual practice for so many years. Like just before this talk today, I was out in my backyard just looking up at the mountains and the sun shining on the oleander hedge, and I can kind of go into that state almost naturally, just observing, and the mind is not connected to any, you know, it's not pursuing thoughts. It's just observing what comes and what goes, and there's just a peacefulness that emerges out of all that. And it's just, and particularly, you know, again, using cannabis for spiritual purposes is generally an inner directed thing. You know, it's not, as opposed to, you know, where you're using it socially and you're wanting to be a social lubricant and you're focusing on other people, or medical, where you're focusing on, you know, the relief of symptoms. But spiritual practice, it's all, and you see this with the stronger psychedelics as well. You see the subject is laying on a couch, and he's got headphones on, he's got eye shades on, and the deepest insights, the deepest work is done within. And of course, people who are introverts, such as myself, that's a native tendency. We have to work to go the other way. People who are A-type personalities, who are outer directed, sometimes they have more difficulty going within because it's a little contrary to their nature. And of course, cannabis greatly helps in that regard.
Well, that's what cannabis is so incredible. It can do two things that seem to be diametrically opposed. Cannabis can help you become more extroverted in social situations where you feel more comfortable in talking and being with other people. But cannabis at the same time can also help you go within yourself and close into yourself. It can do both. I guess it kind of depends on how you're using it or why you want to use it. If you want to use it to socialize, it could help you socialize and be extroverted. If you wanted to help you do introspection of your own being, it could also help you do that. It's quite an amazing plant, that's for sure.
Yes, well, intent is the important thing there.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that. Yeah, we're going to be talking about it in a little bit. I'm going to have to take a break for just a minute, and then we're going to get into that. But I want to talk, I'm going to just say this here. This is something that you wrote, and I would like you, when we come back after our break, to talk about this. And you state that the states of consciousness available through cannabis use can be even deeper than those achieved by seasoned meditators without the years of discipline and training. Used reverentially and with proper intention, it is capable of ushering its initiates into the realm of, and you use that word, and you're going to have to correct me on that, Savakalpa Samadhi. What's the word?
Savakalpa Samadhi, yes.
There you go. The portal of mystical and unitive consciousness. So we're going to take a little break, and then I want to get back to that statement, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about it, okay? So just hang tight
Sounds
for a moment.
Good.
I'm not going to put you in the listening room. You'll be right here in the studio. But just hang tight, and we'll get right back to you. Okay. Hey,
okay.
Folks, this is Marijuana, Compassion, and Common Sense and LannySense.com. And, well, I want to let you know about something that we have available for you, and that is a thing called it's a work of art called Higher Power 420. It's a gorgeous and mind-boggling limited edition print depicting everyone's, and this is so appropriate for this show, favorite deities in the joyous 420 celebration. Conceived and designed by me and artistically rendered by Shane Master Creation Hibbets, Higher Power 420 is an engaging, thought-provoking, and satiric look at the foibles of religion and the role marijuana can play in today's polarized and estranged world. For thousands of years, marijuana has aided the social cohesion of emerging societies by reducing stress and anxiety. It calms people down, makes it easier for them to exist harmoniously with each other by creating a mental state of altruism, understanding, and compassion. With all the violent religious strife going on in the Middle East, it is not so unreasonable to conclude that the Middle East was a lot calmer and more tolerant when smoking hash was part of the many social interactions and rituals. Cannabis brings people together, broadens their perspective, and helps them take pleasure in the company of other people they normally would find it difficult to be with. That's the core of Higher Power 420, a beautiful art print depicting the gathering together of the iconic religious figures of today enjoying each other's company. Higher Power 420 depicts a party with all the favorite deities in a joyous 420 celebration as they escape from their adherents' incessant squabbles, as they relax and enjoy each other's company while sharing their common, albeit supernatural, humanity. Only cannabis could allow them to kick back and enjoy each other. Hey, it's a limited edition iconograph. Each 16-inch by 20-inch art print is signed and numbered by the artist and comes with a certificate of authenticity. Be the first to have one adorn the wall of your home or office. It's sure to be a conversation starter in any situation. Also makes the perfect gift for your sophisticated cannabis connoisseur friends. The cost? Only $24.20. And that includes all shipping and handling charges. To see this thought-provoking and iconoclastic print and to order your personal copy of a signed and numbered limited edition of Higher Power 420, go to www.higherpower420.com. That's www.higherpower420.com. Thank you very much. I think you will really enjoy that print. Okay, and one other thing I wanted to let you know about, of course, I said at the beginning of the show, if you'd like to get on my email newsletter and stay informed about all things cannabis-related and get into my new one, LannySense.com, hey, it's very simple. Just go to www.marijuananews.com, and at the top of the masthead, the navigation bar, sign the words newsletter, click on it, fill out the form, and you'll start getting my newsletter. Like I said, I'm not going to overflow your basket with all kinds of stories I think everybody should read. I only send it out maybe two, maybe at the most three times a month. And if sometime you'd say, hey, I don't want to read what this guy is saying anymore, just scroll to the bottom of the newsletter, and there's an unsubscribe button, and you can get out from getting it. But I don't think once you start getting it, you're going to unsubscribe. I think you'll really like it. www.marijuananews.org, and then in the navigation bar, click newsletter. Okay, we are going to get back to Terry and our discussion on cannabis and spiritual practice. And I had read that statement from Terry, which says that cannabis can help you achieve consciousness even deeper than those by mediators who have done use of discipline and training, and is capable of ushering in its initiates in the realm of, and I would like you to explain those words that I cannot even pronounce, which is the portal of mystical and unitive consciousness. So how can cannabis actually help a person develop their spirituality even better than people who've spent years in meditative states?
Well, because of the visionary trance state, you know, it takes discipline, and like I said earlier, some people are more natural meditators than others, but cannabis just gives you that, you know, it just puts the mind in that receptive trance state where you can go deep. And samadhi is not a frequent state. Achieving samadhi, even savikalpa samadhi, is the portal of the unitive state. There's another state called nirvikalpa samadhi, which is the complete obliteration of the ego. And of course, the ego is that illusion that we are separate beings from all the rest of creation, you know, these skin-encapsulated egos that are running around separate from everything else. But the underlying truth is that we are, in fact, there's only one thing happening. We are actually one with that, and that is what is achieved in the samadhi state. But in all fairness, you know, it's something that is achieved. It's a temporary state. It's achieved infrequently through the use of cannabis. It would be kind of like expecting to go on the golf course today and hit a hole in one. Well, it can be done, perhaps more likely if you practice more. But psychedelic researchers with the stronger psychedelics, they have found that, because these are also miraculously healing substances, they can heal entrenched addictions, they can heal PTSD, they can relieve and fear of death and you know, terminal illness, that type of thing. But they find that a high predictor of these healings taking place is if the person reports having one of these unitive states. And basically, the core of all malaises of the human soul, either consciously or subconsciously, is the fear of death. We of all creatures are the only ones that know that someday our bodies are going to die. But if you're fortunate enough to achieve this state known as samadhi, what you realize is that I am not this little life that I'm so trying hard to keep together, that I'm actually one with the one of all existence. And the one of all existence is formless, birthless, deathless. And if I am one with it, therefore who I really am is immortal. And if you're deeply convinced, because it wasn't some teaching that someone tried to foist on you, but it was actually a direct experience in your own, the privacy of your own psyche, you see, then you come out of that experience being healed from the fear of death. There's a little wisdom saying about that that says, he who dies before he dies doesn't die when he dies. And that's what I was just talking about. So that's one of the ways that this state is very healing. Now, we have to distinguish the state of samadhi from what is called enlightenment, because those are two different things. The state of samadhi is a temporary experience. You eventually come out of it and you again see the world as presented in as separate objects and so forth, but you have the memory of that. But when you can then with great conviction integrate this insight into all of your thoughts, attitudes, and actions of everyday life, and if you live from the abiding awareness that you are one with all and that all is sacred, then you are an enlightened person. And that's simple but not easy. It takes a lot of conviction.
And cannabis can help you get to that state.
It points you to the way, because it moves you into those realms. And you know, that's probably one reason why I became kind of a pro-cannabis activist. I mean, beyond the fact that, you know, my life almost got destroyed by the legal aspects of the plant, and beyond the fact, of course, now California has it legal, but I firmly believe that, you know, whatever use people make of the plant, because it's the same plant, that there's always a thing, you know, the possibility of someone who never would consider it for spiritual use. They just use it for social lubricant uses. But there's that idea that one day they go to a party buzzed, and it's a kind of a dull party. They step out on the back porch and go right into samadhi, and their life is changed. And so it's a thing of, if you hang out in mystical consciousness, I mean, it so helps as an antidote for our obsessive compulsion of doing, and you know, rather than being.
Gotcha. Well, you know, in your treatise on cannabis and spirituality, you talk about sort of like five steps or things that need to, I'd like you to kind of go over those and explain them one by one. Now, first, you write that intent is important. Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, that's a spiritual practice too, setting an intent. So if you have an intent to, you know, if you have an intent to connect with something higher, if you have an intent to go to that place of beingness, to be open to divine revelation, then, you know, that's going to tend to crystallize as your experience, because that's a spiritual law of the universe, that power follows attention, and that, you know, what you believe to be so tends to show up as your experience. So setting an intent, if your intent is to have a spiritual experience with cannabis, then you're going to be pointed in that direction. You know, it's kind of like if your intent is to drive to Los Angeles, well, then you're going to be pointing your car, if you live out here in the desert, you're going to be pointing your car in a westerly direction rather. But if your intent is to go to Arizona, you're probably going to want to point your car in an easterly direction. So it's where your heading is. Yes.
Okay. And then number two, you write that you need to create a safe and sacred space for the experience to unfold. Would you like to explain that, please?
A sacred space, people who will understand this, anybody who's done any kind of ritual work, and this is, again, unique to spiritual practice. You don't just casually go into it, you know, kind of on the spur of the moment, because it's a deep soul opening, and you want to, kind of like in a ritual, you create a circle, but it's a definite space that is not only a sacred, it's set aside for the specific purpose of soul tending, so it unfolds in a particular time that you've set aside, an opportune time, and in a particular place, and you control the environment, because set and setting are very important. You basically want to be, have, you don't want to have media blaring because all the bad news of the day that you're opening your soul to. No, that doesn't work. You shut off the media. You make yourself unavailable to your friends. I like to, in fact, I'm getting ready next week to go down to the Anza Borrego Desert, one of my favorite places down there. It's just a place of power for me. And it's easy, especially during the middle of the week, to just disappear and it's the nature is very supportive. I'm not going to be distracted by emails. I'm not going to be distracted by news feeds. And, you know, I can be in places that the silence is just overwhelming. And literally, you want to masterfully create this environment to give yourself space to think.
So this, so creating the sacred space and set and setting, they're all interrelated.
Yes, the setting is, you know, and you want something that's aesthetically pleasing, whether it's nature or at home, you know, something that somebody once said, you know, surround yourself with the things that you love. That's a good practice, whether you're using cannabis or not, but because it lifts you, you know, it lifts you when you see a particular painting that you love, every time you see that, it lifts you. Or if you like nature, every time you see a sunset, it lifts your consciousness just by that. And of course, the set really is what you bring to it in terms of your mental state, your physical and emotional state. And just like the stronger psychedelics, it's you don't want to use cannabis for spiritual practice if you've just had an emotional upset, or if you feel uncomfortable with the place that you're in, or if you feel tired, or you don't feel well, you know, then in that case you want to wait until things smooth out so you have clear sailing, and you know, you go a lot further towards your goal of, you know, touching the, what I call the hem of the garment, the awareness of the divine.
Okay. Now, you also write in your cannabis and spiritual practice that you have to consider the means of ingestion and dose. So obviously those have an effect on the effectiveness of the for the spirituality. So what does a person have to consider regarding the means of inhalation and the dose to achieve this use of cannabis for spirituality?
Well, another place I write that generally cannabis use for spiritual practice is it tends to happen with higher doses, but doesn't have to, but it tends to also be infrequent. And the idea there is that, you know, if you do it all the time for one reason or another, there's a tolerance that's built up. So on any given occasion, you don't get the lift. And, you know, you want to maximize the lift. You want it to be special because it is special. In fact, people who have used cannabis for a number of years for various reasons, if they're now wanting to approach it for spiritual uses, you almost have to come at it like you did the very first time you use it, with a sense of awe and mystery and delicious anticipation, you know, rather than, you know, so it's, you want to have it be infrequent. And of course, dose is important. If you ingest it, of course, you have to realize that there's a time delay up to 2 hours. So you got to find the sweet spot. You don't want to overdo it, because then if you start getting anxiety, then you're not going to be in a place that, you know, you're going to be able to unfold it. You're going to probably be fighting the experience. So there's kind of a sweet spot between not enough and too much. But if you're going to err on anything, you probably want to err on the side of too little rather than too much. But you eventually find that sweet spot where, you know, you're expanded. And, of course, your whole mental, like I said earlier, your whole mental and physical state on any given day greatly, even almost more than the type of cannabis and how much that determines how far in you're going to go, how high you're going to go. And, you know, I've had the same strain, you know, one time I barely touched the ceiling, another time I can see forever. It just depends on your whole outlook. And so, but again, you want to manage everything so that you give yourself every opportunity to have the most positive and refreshing experience possible.
Now, are there's, you know, there's all kinds of different types of meditation, and you write about meditative techniques. Are there certain meditative techniques that are especially good to use with cannabis?
Well, at least for me, I find I, because I naturally tend that way, I don't need to actually consciously apply any technique at all. It just kind of happens automatically for me. But again, I've kind of habituated to that. But in my at the little sessions we're going to have, the in-person sessions in a couple weeks, I'm gonna give the tools to. It's just a simple mindfulness meditation. It's not focused on. It's not a particular position you have to be in. You don't have to do a full lotus. I don't think I could do a full lotus position if my life depended on it. But it's basically it's simply focusing on the breath. You go in. You focus on the breath. Sometimes it helps to have a little music there to take you in, but it's all about focusing on your breath, not on your thinking. And if your thoughts start wandering, you bring it, your attention back to the breath. And so it's a very simple technique. It's easily mastered, and it's a great technique to use daily with or without cannabis. And again, when you're in that state of beingness, you're making yourself available for these higher states, which, you know, there are a number of people, some of them don't want to admit it, but they've gone into samadhi just spontaneously without expecting it, without doing anything to invoke it. It just sometimes happens, but you have to be receptive, you know, and in that being state. So, but yeah, just focusing on the breath and training your mind in that way, 20 minutes a day really works good. And they say if you do something every day for 30 days, it becomes a habit. So that's
very, yeah, I guess that's a good point. You do something every day for 30 days, it becomes a habit. Very true. So you did mention that you're going to be at our Marijuana and Prohibition Project meetings on Saturday, February 1st, both in Palm Springs and Joshua Tree, and that you're going to actually take people through a guided meditation. Could you kind of explain what that's going to be?
Well, just what I said, you know, after I do a little introduction and touch some of the topics we've been discussing today, yes, I'll have some music and I'll just take you through. Normally you want to have a 20-minute session, I think, because of the time constraint. I'll just do it for 10 minutes just so people can get a feel what that's like, focusing on the breath. And then I have some other aids which I'll be using to help them if their thoughts begin to wander away. And it's just training to go back to the breath. And we'll do that for about 10 minutes. And that's probably all it takes to know what it's about, and then you can take that home with you and apply it as needed, and to, you know, to your spiritual practice. And of course, the more kinds of spiritual practice you have, the better it is. And, you know, achieving samadhi is kind of like in the musical world, what you would is comparable to like getting to perform at Carnegie Hall. And of course the joke is, well, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Well, you practice, you know. So we'll have a chance to do that at those meetings on February 1st.
Very good. Okay, one last question I got to ask, just because for my own, can a person who is not a believer, an atheist, agnostic, or whatever, can they achieve these states?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I believe that most people are call themselves agnostics or atheists because, well, in my work as a minister, a lot of people that come to our centers for spiritual living, they don't like the G word. They don't like the word God because it conjures up images of an old man with a gray beard and a big stick and an anger management problem. But, you know, if that's the God that people believe in, I mean, I guess I'm an atheist too, because I don't, you know, that's a child's fantasy, you know. But so really what I like to tell people when they have issues with the G word is replace the word life with a capital L for the word God, and you'll have the same understanding that I have, and without all the baggage. So it's really about being in alignment with life. And when you're, as we teach, when your life is in alignment with life, your life works. When you try to do things some other way because of bad teaching or misconstrued ideas against the way life is, then you it's kind of like if you have to go to the chiropractor and you have your back is out of alignment and it's causing you pain because it's out of alignment. It's not the way the back is supposed to be. It's supposed to be in a straight line and all the muscles are where they're supposed to be. So they give you an adjustment, and when your back is aligned with the gravity and the muscles are all in the proper place, then the pain goes away. So when you align your thinking with the way life is, then your life works. So it's not about placating some crotchety old man in the sky, you know. So absolutely, you can achieve those states of consciousness and we say there's really nothing to be healed. There's only truth to be revealed, and you'll have a whole different understanding of spirituality and religion, and you know, you can get rid of the crotchety old man syndrome once and for all.
Good. Well, listen, Terry, I want to thank you for joining us today. Would you like to give out some information if people would like to contact you personally about this, how they could get hold of you to further discuss these issues with you?
Well, I can. I'll give out my email address, and I guess that would.
That would be a good way.
It's Tesheron. That's T as in Tom, E S H. E-R-O-N as in Nancy at AOL.com. And in case you missed that, you know, you give Lanny a call and he's got that for you. I'll be happy to assist you in any kind of spiritual guidance you might need, with or without cannabis. That's what I do. That's my purpose for being here. So, I'm be happy to help you and the purpose, of any religion, any and all religions, is self-realization, the realization of your true, authentic, divine nature. And so any way I can assist you to do that, I'd be happy to work with you on that level.
Well, excellent. Well, I'm going to look forward to seeing you on Saturday, February 1st, at both our Palm Springs and Joshua Tree meetings. If you would like more information, just go to my blog at marijuananews.org/blog, B-L-O-G, or you can go to Marijuana News, and the information will be about these upcoming meetings that you can go to, or you can always just give me a call at 760-799-2055 or send an email to Lanny at marijuananews.org. That's L-A-N-N-Y at marijuananews.org. Well, Terry, thank you so much for joining us. I will look forward to seeing you on Saturday, February 1st. And listen, folks, like I said, the format of the show is going to be changing over the next month or so. So keep in tune, keep watch, subscribe to my newsletter, and tell your friends about Marijuana News, Compassion and Common Sense, and about Marijuana News, and tell them all the good news about cannabis and how it can improve their life both spiritually and recreationally and medicinally. And thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.